and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to all of you. I am Mark Maron. That's my friend Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're back from vacation. We are well relaxed. We are not chipper because, you know, the situation in the country is a bit dire. I can't be as excited as I want to be about my own personal state of being because I am concerned about what's going on in the world. But I did have a great vacation, Riley. I don't know about you.
I did. I had a really nice vacation, but it kept being interrupted by these images, which I think are going to haunt a lot of people for a long, long time. From New Orleans. I mean, it was just, you couldn't get away from it. I couldn't get away from it.
Well, my first week of the vacation, I was able to get away from it because it hadn't happened yet.
Yes, that's a good reason.
I was in Hawaii. I went to Kauai. Riley, I flew in a helicopter with no doors, Riley.
Now, you said you were going to do this. How did that work out for you?
It was ridiculous. What are you kidding me? Here's the weird thing is that I'm waiting to get on this helicopter, all right? And it's going to be good, you know, and I see the guy, he's wearing fatigues, the flyer. You know, anytime you do a recreational helicopter ride, you're going to be dealing with a vet, you know, flying the thing of some war. You know, it was unclear.
Colonel somebody.
It was unclear which war it was or who, you know, what his experience was. But here's what I was thinking. I'm looking at this thing, and the only thing I'm thinking, Riley, is, all right, I'm just going to get on, and as soon as I get on, I'm going to sum up how you fly the thing just in case the guy has a heart attack. This is what I'm thinking. That I'm going to get on the helicopter, and just in case something happens, I'll be able to fly it. Within 5 minutes of being off the ground, man, I was like, I can't fly this. We're in trouble. But
it's real windy, huh? Does it shake a lot?
No doors, Riley.
No, it's shaking.
No. I was actually thinking about you when I'm sitting up there because I'm sitting there. All right, I'm on the outside. We're in the front seat. There's another couple in back who I tried to get to know because I figured if I'm going to die with these people, I should know them. And it turns out the guy was studying to be a podiatrist. Could you think of someone else he'd rather go down with? A podiatrist?
A foot doctor?
Right. Not even a foot doctor. All right, I'm rambling. I know we got to get into the news, but the bottom line is I'm sitting up front. My wife's in the middle. The guy flying it's next to her, the other couple's in the back, and I'm sitting out, half of my body, Kalo, half my body out of the helicopter. All right,
what were you holding on to?
Wait, I was holding on to a strap, and I was strapped in, and I know this is not a big deal because there are people flying helicopters saving lives every day, but for me, Mark Maron hadn't been up in a helicopter before, and I'd never had that existential feeling of actually being able. I'm flying over the Nepali coast, okay, in Kauai, and I'm saying things like, "Wow, that's beautiful. I'm going to die." The jump from "that's beautiful" to "I'm going to die," going back and forth like that, wavering, was thrilling. I also swam with sea turtles, my friend.
Swam with sea turtles?
Yeah, we're going to get into the news in a minute. See, I feel this pressing need because I know there's a disaster at hand, but I do want to have my vacation moment. And the bottom line is that you, in Kauai, you can get in the water anywhere, and you just see sea turtles, and you're like, I'm going to get in with my snorkel and swim with them. And I did. And I swam with these giant sea turtles, these dinosaurs. My wife and I are swimming around with them, and it was the most peaceful, most relaxing, most overwhelming, exciting thing. One of the biggest thrills of my life. And I thought, you know, wow.
How fast are they?
In the race, the turtle, you know, when we had...
No, I'm figuring, like, you could grab onto the top of the shell or something.
Hold I thought on. About doing that. I petted it, and I know I'd seen pictures of people grabbing onto the top of the shell, but I didn't want to bother the guy. He was eating, and I was just happy to hang out and watch him. And I thought to myself, wow, where can I get one of these? If I feel this good... And, you know, at a different point in time, back in the day, if you had a couple of guys that, you know, you were wasted, you've been up for a few days, like, let's get a turtle.
Yeah.
Let's
bring him back.
And then, you know, just seeing how that unfolds into the worst idea ever, you know, like, didn't even fit in the tub. What are we going to feed it? This is stupid. I think it's dying. You guys, we got to put it back. You guys.
I had a friend once that bought a school of piranha.
Mm.
And I'm serious.
That's one of those back in the day kind of ridiculous things.
I'm telling you, this is a true story. Mm. And he used to have to go to these pet stores and buy like huge bags full of goldfish. And feed the goldfish to and it was ugly.
I'll tell you, it's the carnal reality of how life works on this planet is ugly.
Yes.
The next week, you know, after Hawaii, I came back home. The hurricane, I guess, you know, hit Sunday, right a week ago Sunday. And I returned from Hawaii on that evening. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, Riley. It took me a few days to lock into what was happening because I'm in vacation head. I'm not watching TV. I'm hanging around the house in Los Angeles, the house I never see. And then I start turning on the TV and I start watching things. I start looking at what these guys are doing. Brendan and Dan, who did a great job last week.
Yes, they did.
You know, he's emailing me, you know, what they're covering on the show. And I start looking at that. And I'm, all of a sudden, after this amazing vacation, I'm sitting there in my living room in Los Angeles thinking, the world is ending. How the hell could this happen in this country? Who is in charge of this? Why isn't somebody taking some control over this thing? And why are these people, you know, why is this happening in America that these people are stranded, they're drowning, that it seems to be that nobody is caring for them? And it was infuriating. So for 3 days, I'm sitting there at home feeling powerless, as many of us did, and completely, you know, what is it, disgusted, appalled in the deepest way with the government of this country.
You know, it was amazing for me, Mark, to look at the early pictures that were coming out of New Orleans. And the first thing that crossed my mind was Port-au-Prince, because I've been to Haiti twice.
Right.
And I've seen the slums of Port-au-Prince, a place called Cité Soleil. And the minute I started seeing people in New Orleans, when I started seeing the kind of chaos that was going on around the Superdome, the first thing I thought of was Cité Soleil, where people are routinely flooded like this. Literally every other day. You know, every time there's a downpour, Cité Soleil turns into a muck and mire, and the only thing they can get in there every day, hopefully, is a truck full of water. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, we are supposed to be the last superpower left on Earth. The last superpower after the fall of the Soviet Union. This is how the world views us, and this is the best we can do. The Chinese do a better job. When they have those typhoons, they had a typhoon the other day. They had three deaths.
Hey,
three.
Look, Cuba was offering us help. Cuba, who does a better job with, you know, as far as evacuating people. And I started thinking about myself here in New York. In any situation, first of all, Americans don't want to believe that this can happen to them. They don't want to believe that. That's a natural human response. It's called denial. They don't want to believe it can happen to them. But the denial on behalf of the government, and it's worse than denial because it's a type. They are complicit in the murder. It's murder that their negligence has caused people to die every day for the last 10 days. And, you know, it's murder on some level because of the government's negligence. And now what are they going to do? Now we're going to spend the next, what, week, 2 weeks, next month, next year. This administration is going to try to blame local officials. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in New Orleans. In one of them, here's sadly a few button events, and then we're going to talk about blame. Mayor Ray Nagin of New Orleans has said that there may be 10,000 dead. He turned control over to the feds yesterday, pulled the cops and the firefighters off the street, you know, sending them for, a lot of them needed counseling, evaluation. Two of the guys committed
suicide.
Two
guys committed suicide. There were at one point 500 police officers. One third of the entire New Orleans Police Department was unaccounted for.
Yeah, a lot of them had they didn't know where their homes were, their families were. I mean, who knows what was going on? But the chaos, because of there was no FEMA support, there was no federal support, because of the negligence on behalf of this administration, chaos unleashed and the cops crumbled. How could they not? They had no backup. They had no facilitations to get people food, to get people water. How could they not crumble on some level?
This is, in my judgment, one of the scariest incidents, certainly right up there with September 11, 2001.
Horrendous.
It was a horrendous situation, and it shows to me conclusively that while the Bush administration may be very good at playing politics, they have no clue how to govern.
Yeah, it's frightening, and it's almost it's evil, Riley. They don't have any clue to govern, but that we have to find out. You know that it has to come to this
at the cost of lives, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's here, whether it's the corporate scandals that have rocked Wall Street over the last few years. You put all this together, and you see a government that again likes to play politics. And what we're going to see over the next few days, Mark, make no mistake
about
this, is people trying to play politics and spin their way out of responsibility for the chaos they created.
Yeah, you can't spin your way out of responsibility when there are people crying and dying on television 24 hours a day because of their negligence. Now, some good news coming out of New Orleans is that the floodwaters have begun to recede a little bit.
Yes.
They have shored up that levee, and they have begun pumping, draining the floodwaters out of New Orleans. But it's very minor good news in the sense that it's the beginning. But there are still people that haven't been evacuated. The the Astrodome, or the Superdome, I mean, is completely emptied. They were close to emptying the convention center, you know, this weekend. So things are starting to move forward, but that does not let anybody off the hook on the federal government level. It does not let George Bush off the hook, and does not let Michael Chertoff off the hook. Does not let Michael Brown from FEMA off the hook, who is completely unqualified for his job. The cronyism and negligence of this administration. What we're seeing in New Orleans is the catharsis. It is the explosion of Republican policies and what they reap on all levels. We're going to get into that, starting with blame, because that's what these guys do. The neocon death cult, the Bush administration has gone into full blame dispersal mode, and they're blaming everybody but themselves, and there's every indication that all they should be blaming is themselves. It's 16 past the hour. Good morning. We'll get into that in a second. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Whether it's the governor's problem, I don't know whether it's the president's problem, but somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
21 past the hour, Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Yo.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America. We're back. That was Mayor Ray Nagin of New Orleans. You know, standing up. You know, because what is happening now, as is expected and as should be, you know, seen as a transgression against everything that is human, is that George W. Bush, Dan Bartlett, Michael Chertoff, Michael Brown from FEMA. Dan Bartlett, of course, a spokesperson for the White House. What is his exact
Shill.
Name now?
Shill is the nerd.
They are all beginning to try to displace the blame in very subtle ways, and some not so subtle, onto state and local officials in Louisiana, where it was clearly, without a question, FEMA's responsibility to have a plan in place. But because FEMA has been gutted, moved over to Homeland Security, no longer has a cabinet position post, and also the bottom line is that this administration cut funding to continue building or even to begin building the type of levee structure that was necessary to protect New Orleans from this type of tragedy. But now they're going to try to cut and run with this thing. They are going to try to push it off on local authorities, which is heinous. They can't take responsibility for anything, but the truth here is that we're going to see right through it, Riley. How can you not?
Absolutely. Yeah. And remember that the people charged with the responsibility of building and maintaining these levees are the Army Corps of Engineers. And when did the government begin reducing the Corps' spending? In the year 2001. Why is that significant? Because that's the first year of the Bush administration.
Yeah, they started reducing Corps spending, and then the shift the federal emergency of FEMA into Homeland Security gutted it even more.
Yeah.
Because Homeland Security was basically just a way to funnel money into the pockets of Bush cronies. Now, once Chertoff stepped up and no plan was put in place, the big idea was to privatize all these, federal emergency management systems to get them out into private contractors. But, in all the chaos, no plan was in place on a federal level for FEMA to respond to this thing responsibly and quickly.
Well, what you have here is the same kind of logic that certain corporate executives have used when they've put unsafe products out in the marketplace. And we can go over a litany and a list of these different, several of them were automobiles, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is they decide what is the acceptable level of risk. They're fighting a billion-dollar a month war in Iraq. They're trying to cut taxes to their wealthy friends. And suddenly they don't have money for things like repairing levees and making sure that there is some kind of coordinated plan in the event a hurricane strikes. Now, Bush said on September 1st, quoting here, "I don't think anyone anticipated the breach of the levees." Now, that was on September 1st. Dr. Max Mayfield, director of the National Hurricane Center, told the New Orleans Times-Picayune, more on them later, on Sunday, that his staff had a conference call with officials from FEMA and Homeland Security, including Michael Brown and Michael Chertoff, before the hurricane hit. And in that call, Mayfield's staff according to the Times-Picayune specifically, warned the Bush administration that levees and flood walls might be breached by the storm. Those levees are only able to handle Category 3 hurricanes.
Right, and the surge from a Category 5 is what brought all this upon. And this is post-hurricane when
yes.
all this damage happened. But, you know, anybody who has visited New Orleans, anyone who spent any time there, even for 10 minutes, the first time you point and go, why are the ships up there? You realize that and why are they burying people above the ground? This has been known a long time. I mean, there's a Popular Mechanics article that somebody sent me from September 2001 that basically was talking about a technological system that had been put in place by somebody at the Louisiana State University to monitor the surges. So that's going back, you know, at least 4 years, and people have known this for at least 20 years, certainly people in New Orleans. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little while in terms of people fighting to get the funding. And that money that you were talking about before, the money that was cut from the Army Corps of Engineers' ability to build these levees and to rebuild them properly, that was done in the energy bill just a couple months ago in June.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
70-some-odd million dollars were denied this city because of what? Because they were hedging their bets, like you said, Riley.
They were hedging their bets, and this is a sign of incompetence, ladies and gentlemen. This is an administration that is supposed to run the country.
Michael Brown, who is the head of FEMA, do you know what his last job was? His last job was that he spent 11 years as the commissioner of judges and stewards of the International Arabian Horse Association, and he was forced out of that job because of a supervision failure. Lawsuits over supervision failure. This guy knew nothing. He was a hack attorney. He used to handle estates, and then he was handling horses, and now he's put in charge of securing the country in the face of these tremendous emergencies because of cronyism, because he was pulled in by his old college roommate.
That's what happens when an administration decides that a federal agency is not really worth the time and the trouble. But that's why they would put a hack like this in a job like this.
Tom Ridge, another great example.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into this. We're going to talk about why they should have known. I mean, Larry Johnson, our buddy Larry Johnson.
Our good friend Larry Johnson.
The CIA guy has got the lowdown on a plan that was in place that the Bush administration put into place and didn't even follow their old plan.
He says it's criminal. We'll tell you why when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Disaster. It can happen anywhere, but we got a few tips so you can be prepared for floods, tornadoes, or even a quake. You gotta be ready so your heart don't break. Disaster prep is your responsibility, and mitigation is important to our agency. People helping people is what we do, and FEMA is there to help see you through. When disaster strikes, we are at our best, but we're ready all the time because disasters don't rest.
Yeah, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. That song comes from the FEMA website, FEMA for Kids. Maybe Michael Brown should have taken a listen to that a few months ago. It inspired him to take the necessary actions to put a plan in place for New Orleans.
Well, you know, the guy that did it is a guy named Scott J. Wilson. Now, there are two Scott J. Wilsons who work for the federal government.
You're hilarious. We're sitting there before the show. We're overwhelmed. We're up to our necks in hurricane facts, and we're trying to figure out a through line to the show and talk, and Riley's like, who's this guy Scott?
Yeah.
Who's the guy that did the rap? So he went online, and he didn't find any definitive
No, there's two of them that work for the federal government. Two Scott J. Wilsons. One works for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. The other works for the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Well, you know, we're going to get an email like, I know Scott Wilson. He's a failed writer, and he's like, he
failed is right.
Hey, good morning, Duluth, Minnesota. We're on 1490 AM in Duluth. It's Air America 1490. Welcome aboard. Hey, folks, this weekend, our next live broadcast will be our biggest ever, my friends.
Yeah.
We'll be at the New School this Friday. We'll have former Senator Bob Kerrey and The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert. We'll be in the same theater that once housed inside the actor's studio and served as a site for one round of 9/11 commission hearings. It's the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. That's this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. That should be fun to be doing it in a big theater. Later in the show, we got the Mississippi Democratic Congressman Benny Thompson's going to be with us to talk about some stuff and to talk about who's to blame for this horrendous lack of relief effort on the Gulf Coast. We're going to talk a little bit more about Mississippi in just a few minutes. Mississippi feeling a little neglected in terms of coverage and attention in light of the damage that New Orleans has experienced. Mississippi was hit harder, actually, by the storm initially, but because of the levee breaks, did not suffer the type of damage that New Orleans did, but nonetheless was damaged incredibly in a lot of damage.
A lot of dirty business, just like in New Orleans.
Now, let's also, a little later in the show, we've got some great clips of sound from Laura Bush, or Barbara
no,
Bush.
No, Barbara Bush.
The mother, that really illustrates just what an aristocratic pomposity this family is, just how shameless they are in terms of their class and how they feel about poor people, and just it's a type of tone that, you know, I would have expected in Europe, I guess, in the 1800s, 1700s. But
yeah.
to hear these people be candid, to hear George W. Bush in candid moments reveal who he truly is inside, somebody who is not only pathologically narcissistic and unable to experience empathy, but he's also a horrendous classist. He is a member of an aristocratic class, and it bubbles up out of him that he has absolutely no connection to the working people of this country, and certainly no connection to the poor people of this country, which is, you know, which would go to show why the Senate Finance Committee were told yesterday morning that Bill Frist will go ahead with the vote to permanently repeal the estate tax, perhaps today. This is their priority, folks. How can we make sure that more rich people can keep more of their money?
Yeah.
That's their priority in the face of this horrible event. And you know, you understand what that means? If they take away the estate tax forever, that means that the charities in this country, if there were no estate tax, like let's just take an example. In the year 2000, if there was no estate tax, charitable donations would have been $13 billion to $25 billion lower than they would have been with the estate tax.
Yeah, you know, it's incredible that this administration thinks that this is how you spin your way out of the disaster that they created in their response.
Yeah, let's
to
give some more money to the rich and also make it harder for charities to get the money they need. And now let's get into this criminal negligence.
Yes.
Is what Larry Johnson has accused this administration of in light of their response to the flooding in New Orleans, because he says, and this is true, that there was a national response plan that was put in place by the Bush administration. The national response plan was accepted and implemented by the administration in December 2004. According to the preface, President Bush, quote, directed the development of a new national response plan, the NRP, to align federal coordination structures, capabilities, and resources into a unified, all-discipline, and all-hazards approach to domestic incident management. The end result is vastly improved coordination among federal, state, and local and tribal organizations to help save lives and protect America's communities by increasing the speed, effectiveness, and efficiency of incident management, end quote. The National Response Plan, implemented by the Bush administration, 2004, was not implemented in this case.
No, this was in December of 2004. And when they talk about incident management, ladies and gentlemen, they're talking about things like hurricanes. Let's be very clear what they mean by incident management. This could be anything from acts of terror to natural disasters. And it was supposed to have been implemented. And Larry Johnson, an ex-CIA guy. Now, you know, Larry Johnson is not just some guy off the street. We've had him on the air many times before. Those of you who are just listening to us recently may not have heard his name, may not have heard his voice. But Larry Johnson has been a very, very persistent critic of the Bush administration's inability to get various government agencies to work together. Mark, when you start hearing from people, from military people, that they were trying to get on the ground and get to help people inside New Orleans, but they got there and then there was nobody to talk to, no command and control, and when a U.S. military serviceman, a colonel, says that things were better organized in Afghanistan
than
they
were
in New Orleans. We got a problem on our hands here, ladies and gentlemen. It's a problem that runs long and deep and goes way beyond New Orleans. Can someone tell me, and maybe you, maybe Chris Lopresto can answer this. Can someone explain to me why this man, why this president should feel empowered to name anyone as a Supreme Court justice until they straighten out the incompetence that was exposed by Hurricane Katrina?
Absolutely, and this is the same guy that named Tom Ridge to Homeland Security. This is the same guy that named Michael Brown to FEMA. This is the same guy that will appoint his friends, his cronies, despite the fact that they are incapable of doing the job. It's a great question, Riley. Why should we leave him the responsibility to nominate a Supreme Court justice? Why should he even be? He should be impeached tomorrow.
Well, William Rehnquist wasn't even on the Supreme Court steps before George W. Bush was talking about the plans that he had for John Roberts and for nominating another justice to the Supreme Court. Now, they managed to get that done in about 36 hours.
So you're saying to me that he had plans for a dead Supreme Court justice, but not plans for thousands of dead black people.
Exactly.
All right. Well, look, you know, the bottom line is guiding principles for this proactive federal response, which is what we were talking about, the National Response Plan that was put into place by the Bush administration in 2004. Now, this is interesting because these are the guiding principles. This was supposed to be the way it was supposed to be done. The primary mission is to save lives, protect critical infrastructure, property, and the environment, contain the event, and preserve national security. Standard procedures regarding requests for assistance may be expedited or, under extreme circumstances, suspended in the immediate aftermath of an event of catastrophic magnitude. Identified federal response resources will deploy and begin necessary operations as required to commence life safety activities. None of that stuff was done. It took them almost a week to do it, and it's just barely getting started now. It was just a heinous transgression on behalf of this administration.
Absolutely. And now there are reports coming out of Biloxi, Mississippi. We were talking about this before, Mark. The fact that Mississippi feels left out of all of this because of all the attention paid to New Orleans. Well, apparently there is a reported outbreak of dysentery in Biloxi. Apparently, they had to close down a disaster shelter after more than 20 people complained of diarrhea and vomiting, although officials later denied that the dysentery was the cause of it. If this is a problem in Biloxi, and remember that an early report said that 30 people died in a single apartment complex in Biloxi at the beginning of this storm. Now, if this is the, if dysentery is in any way, shape, or form widespread in Biloxi, A, that is a huge hygiene problem, and B, if it's bad in Biloxi, how bad is it in New Orleans?
Dude, I don't think we've even begun to see the type of disease and sickness that's going to come out of that cesspool that has become that city. Because of the lack of ability to, they're just starting to clean up dead bodies today, over the weekend, because they had other priorities, obviously. But if had it begun sooner, had they started evacuating immediately, then there might have been a way to stifle some of what you're talking about. But the mixture of chemicals, raw sewage, and corpses, that are that has become New Orleans, the type of sickness that could come out of that, I don't even, it's a horrendous tragedy.
You know, one of the strangest things I saw over this past weekend was an obviously completely stunned Anderson Cooper on CNN, talking about traveling through New Orleans in a glass-bottom boat and seeing a corpse through the bottom of the boat.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
The corpse of a woman, yes.
Whoa. So he's on the glass-bottom boat trip now? What, are they using glass-bottom boats?
They were using glass-bottom boats, I guess, to get him around New Orleans.
What, but was that the last boat left because they couldn't use it for a rescue?
I don't know.
Oh, that's
don't
awful.
Ask me.
Oh,
but Anderson Cooper is looking through the bottom of this glass bottom
boat.
That's
awful.
And a woman's corpse.
Oh,
and he's describing
awful.
This on CNN. Now, again, people have been asking the question, how is it that the media has been able to get around New Orleans, yet the people that have been displaced? And remember that there are 230,000 people, the number of people that live in a good-sized American city, from New Orleans, now in Texas.
They're going as far away. Some of them are even, some people have opened their doors here. Churches across the country.
14 different states have taken
Utah,
people in.
Utah has taken a lot of people in. I mean, it's unbelievable the reach out that is happening across the country, despite the fact that the federal government dropped the ball and that Bush does not know how to be a leader or do his job, and that he has a bunch of incompetent people under him. I'll tell you who did know how to handle a national disaster, and that's Bill Bill Clinton. We'll get into that in a minute. We'll get into a little bit about John Roberts and what it means for him to be nominated as a Chief Justice. We're also going to get into some staged press conferences that the president, the president's mother, and the president's wife did. They stopped rescue procedure in order to fly in to make it look like they're doing something. It's heinous. I wonder how many people died because they took the copters out of the sky so the president can land. What an irresponsible ass. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
We have been abandoned by our own country. Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast, but the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history. I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings to find out just what happened here. Why did it happen? Who needs to be fired? And believe me, they need to be fired right away, because we still have weeks to go in this tragedy. We have months to go. We have years to go. And whoever's at the top of this totem pole, that totem pole needs to be chainsawed off, and we've got to start with some new leadership.
Well, I know who's at the top of that totem pole, George W. Bush. And that what we just heard there is just the beginning of something that, you know, choked me up big time yesterday. That was Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard. And now the way that it works in New Orleans is they have, instead of boroughs, they have
parishes.
So he's not unlike
a borough president. A borough president in New York. Yeah.
But, you know, what he's saying is not just, this is not just a concerned citizen. This is a guy, Aaron Broussard is a guy who was the president, not only of the Jefferson Parish, but of Parishes Against Coastal Erosion. Now, this is a group that has been telling the government that something needs to happen. Something needs to be done about the levee system, about the flood walls. They have been fighting for legislation for years to fix this thing, and he knew in his heart and from the political activism he was involved in that it was probably going to take something like this. But I'll tell you, I don't think that they had any idea on some level just how horrible it was going to get on a personal level. And it's just a shame, because the rest of him, he was on Meet the Press, and the rest of this statement, the rest of this conversation that he had with Tim Russert was so human and so personal and so real that, you know, the idea in light of it that the administration is trying to blame people like Aaron Broussard for what happened in New Orleans is pure evil. Yep. Can we hear the rest of it?
Most importantly, I want to thank my public employees that have worked 24/7, that burn out, the doctors, the nurses. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me. The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, "Are you coming, son? Is somebody coming?" And she said, "Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday." And she drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Mr. President,
nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us. The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
That's Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard on Meet the Press over the weekend. And the condescension on behalf of this administration, on behalf of George W. Bush, on behalf of Michael Chertoff, on behalf of Michael Brown, on behalf of the Laura Bush, on behalf of Barbara Bush, in the face of that, this has nothing to do with this particular statement has nothing to do with race, with anything other than abandonment. The federal government abandoned these people. And this is guy, Parishes Against Coastal Erosion, The Louisiana legislature actually passed a constitutional amendment requiring any new offshore oil and gas revenue to be put in a trust fund dedicated to coastal erosion. That is the progress that Parishes Against Coastal Erosion made, and that was Aaron Broussard, who's the president of that particular organization, yet the feds didn't step up.
Well, you know, coastal erosion in Louisiana is no joke, all right? It's bad enough in most other places in the United States, but when you look at what the potential for coastal erosion, and they've known that, you know, this coast and that area around New Orleans has been eroding for the last half century, for God's sake. And a lot of it has accelerated over the last few years as funds that would have shored it up have been cut.
All right. Well, it's just a bottom line, Riley. The results of the hurricane that were essentially the levee breaking and the flooding of New Orleans is really the result of 4 years of deliberate Republican policy and budget choices that favor ideology and partisan loyalty at the expense of operational competence. This is everything that the Bush administration represents. Look at the lowdown. A crony with no relevant experience was installed as head of FEMA. All right. That Michael Brown, who was what? He was a horse guy. He was the head for 11 years of the Arabian Horse Foundation or whatever. Mitigation budgets for New Orleans were slashed, even though it was known to be one of the top three risks in this country. FEMA was deliberately downsized as part of the Bush administration's conservative agenda to reduce the role of government. All right? After the Department of Homeland Security was created, which is just basically a slush fund for friends of the Republicans, for friends of the administration, FEMA's preparation and planning functions were taken away. Now, right now, we have Hillary Clinton, though the timing may not be just perfect. Hillary Clinton basically said, look, we want a 9/11 commission style hearing into what went wrong on all levels in the responding to this disaster. She has meant, and when that'll happen is unclear, but she's just putting a call out for it, and obviously needs to happen. But one thing she says is not negotiable is that she wants to plan to introduce legislation that will pull FEMA out of the Department of Homeland Security and give it back to a cabinet-level director like it was under Bill Clinton's presidency. Bill Clinton, a guy who knew how to respond to a hurricane, a guy who knew how to take action, a guy who honestly, in his heart, cared for people of all kinds, a guy who believed that the government should be there, you know, when there is a national disaster that hurts five Americans, one American. I mean, the fact that these people were abandoned down there by this administration, the arrogance. Oh, and wait till you hear this, Riley, that Barbara Bush clip.
Well, you know, that is truly scary. And a lot of the other sound that we're going to have for you later on this morning is also truly scary. There is the issue of race and the fact that 95% of those people that were stacked up like cordwood in the Superdome were African American.
Yeah, and we got Benny Thompson, who is the Democratic congressman from Mississippi, to talk to us a little bit about what's going on there, give Mississippi a little attention. All that's coming up. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark and I are well rested, ready to take on the U.S. government here this morning. I was in Hawaii for a week and then back home in Los Angeles for a week where I got to admit it took me a few minutes to, you know, pick up and, you know, get back on board and get ready to, you know, to call this what it is, a complete failure on behalf of the Bush administration to help Americans who are in dire need in the face of a horrendous catastrophe, horrendous disaster. It's just horrendous all around. And let me tell you something, Riley, and I think you know this. This is a letter I'm holding in front of me by the State of Louisiana Military Department Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness dated August 28th, 2005, the Sunday before the storm hit.
Yes.
It's written by the governor, Governor Blanco of New Orleans, of Louisiana. Sorry, Mayor Nagin. You know, there's a lot of people. Okay. She is the governor of New Orleans. And she says, Dear Mr. President, under the provisions of Section 401 of the Robert T. Stafford Disaster Relief and Emergency Assistance Act, I request that you declare an expedited major disaster for the state of Louisiana as Hurricane Katrina, a Category 5 hurricane, approaches our coast south of New Orleans beginning on August 28, 2005 and continuing. Dig that. That is the Sunday before the storm hits. To move further down, quote, a preliminary damage assessment will be conducted as soon as possible after the landfall of Hurricane Katrina. Based on the predictions we have received from the National Weather Service and other sources, I have determined that this incident will be of such severity and magnitude that effective response will be beyond the capabilities of the state and the affected local governments, and that supplementary federal assistance will be necessary, end quote. The day before it happened, they were asking for help from the federal government, and they got nothing. Bupkis. They said, no, we're not sending it to you. We don't care how much you scream. We're on vacation. I'm playing golf. I'm in Crawford. Condoleezza is in New York. She's going to see Spamalot and buying shoes. Screw you, they said to the state government. And now they're going to turn around and blame these people, blame them for what's gone on in Louisiana. Horrendous.
It's more than horrendous. As Larry Johnson, our friend from the CIA, former CIA operative Larry Johnson, says, it might well be criminal. There were, in December of last year, there was a plan that was drawn up by this very same administration that was supposed to deal with these kinds of situations, and apparently nobody bothered to implement any of it.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, I got another letter here. There's a series of letters. The Times-Picayune of New Orleans wrote a letter to the president, you know, basically saying, look, you know, please forgive us for, you know, not believing you when you say you're going to do something. But, you know, I'll quote from the letter right here. We're angry, Mr. President, and we'll be angry long after our beloved city and surrounding parishes have been pumped dry. Our people deserved rescuing. Many who could have been were not. That's to the government's shame, end quote. That's a general letter from the editor of the Times-Picayune of New Orleans. And our guest, who we're going to be talking to in just a second, Benny G. Thompson of Mississippi, Democratic Congressman of Mississippi, also on the House Committee of Homeland Security, he signed on to a letter with ranking member of the House Homeland Security Committee, along with Congressman Bill Pascrell of New Jersey, that basically says, quote, as the grim picture coming out of our Gulf states reveals, the federal government has failed to protect the American people and our nation's welfare. Why? That is the question that this letter asks the president. So on the phone right now, as I said, ranking Democrat on the House Committee on Homeland Security. He's been a vocal critic of the Bush administration's slow response to Hurricane Katrina, which ravaged his home state and two others. We're pleased to welcome back to the show Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson. Good morning, Congressman.
Hey, good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
Good morning, Congressman.
How are you doing is the more important question.
Well, I got light 2 days ago, so I'm a little better.
Yeah, that's good.
We're getting some.
There are a lot of other situations that are far worse, as you know.
Yeah, we're getting some reports out of there this morning that you got maybe a little bit of a disease outbreak down there, huh?
Well, we do, and unfortunately, as the letters and comments have said, we could have done a much better job in responding to this emergency. And
who's to blame for that, Congressman?
Well, you know, the primary responsibility rests within the Department of Homeland Security and more specifically within the FEMA. They are the preparedness agency for any major disaster that goes on in America. You know, they're the ones who are supposed to have our back in time of emergency. And in this instance, they just fiddle while New Orleans, other parts of Louisiana and Mississippi just was devastated. And in the time that we needed someone to come in to help.
The level of incompetence to me from where I'm standing was just mind-blowing, Congressman. I can't even, it almost seems evil in its negligence.
Well, you know, it says in testimony, FEMA has said within 12 hours, they can be anywhere in America responding to a disaster. So under anyone's account, it took between 3 and 4 days. And that's just not acceptable. So while we're still in this process of trying to find anybody who's still left alive, we still need to raise the issue of why it wasn't done better.
Congressman Benny Thompson, you heard, I'm sure, as many other Americans heard, Kanye West say essentially, and I'm kind of quoting here, George W. Bush doesn't care about black people. Now, Condoleezza Rice, on the other hand, Secretary of State, a black woman herself, has said that race was not an issue in the response to Hurricane Katrina? Which one of the two of them are right from where you sit?
Well, I look at it, first of all, incompetence in general doesn't necessarily have to be an issue of race. But when you look at all the faces of the people in New Orleans and compare what has gone on in terms of hurricanes all over the world, you would wonder why was the response so slow in this instance when it's never, ever historically been this slow in the past. So while it's not a factor, I don't think, from the president's standpoint, but it makes his administration look very insensitive to the needs of minorities. And that's why I think it will be a long time coming for us to get rid of this. The whole world, not just the people in this country, the whole world is looking at this situation and saying, wonder why in the world they don't do more for their own people. They call their own people refugees rather than evacuees. I mean, just little simple things like that. So what we're trying to do now is start the process of identifying what went wrong. Michael Brown, the head of FEMA, absolutely has to go.
No, no kidding. Wow, what an idiot.
He's absolutely done a miserable job. You start looking at his resume, and the last job he had was working with an Arabian Horse Association.
How the hell did he get the job, Congressman?
Well, it's a political deal.
Yeah.
You know, he's an appointee, and obviously in this system, you can appoint anybody you want to the job, but the unfortunate thing is there are some jobs you want somebody to have some level of expertise in, and the FEMA job, which is one where you really need competence, you'd want somebody, but here's a guy that, from my information, was run off from that job.
Yeah.
He couldn't function with the Arabian Horse Association. How in the world are you going to put the future and the livelihood of American citizens who are at risk in this fellow's hands?
So you're saying it's safe to assume that if somebody who was more cut out for the job or the appropriate pick for the job was in the job, certainly lives could have been saved.
Let me tell you. Everybody in America knew the hurricane was coming. All you had to do was marshal your assets and say, look, folks, as soon as it passed the area, we going in. It should not have been 3 days later. And so our problem with it is now we're running into all this red tape. I talked with the mayor of Hattiesburg, Mississippi yesterday, whose police force had to go and take two 18-wheeler loads of ice and water from Camp Shelby, Mississippi, that had been sitting there for 2 days. And his city has no running water. And he said, what is wrong? We talked to FEMA, and they said they haven't gotten the paperwork done yet.
You know, we keep hearing that over and over. And, Congressman, one of your colleagues on the other side of the Hill, Senator Hillary Clinton, says that FEMA should be taken out of the Department of Homeland Security and made a cabinet-level position again. Now, you're on the Homeland Security Committee. If a piece of legislation that would do that came your way, would you vote for it?
Well, let me say, I would first try to fix the problem. If that fixed the problem, that's fine. But even if we gave it a cabinet-level position and it still functioned as inept as it did, we still have trouble. So I think we have to first look at the causations of what occurred here and then go from there. That's one option that we can absolutely look at. The other is to say, why are we looking at this terrorist threat so great in America and our domestic preparedness has taken second tier? So clearly, that's an option.
But, Congressman, I got to ask you, I mean, has it taken a second tier, or are they equally as unprepared for something else?
Well, ain't no question. let me tell you, FEMA, the reputation of that organization for its mishandling of Hurricane Katrina will go down in the annals of history as the worst managed disaster in the history of this country. It equals to what we did in this country to the people in the flood of
1927. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
And so clearly what we have to do is we have to fix it.
Yeah.
I think, but first we have to look at what went wrong. so it does not happen again.
All right. Well, Congressman Thompson, you know, thank you so much for talking to us. Take care of yourself. Take care of your people down there. You know, our hearts are with you up here.
Yes, certainly. Congressman, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. And the one thing I want to say is that to the men and women who worked on the rescue, they did a wonderful job. They were just outnumbered. If we had provided reinforcements, they could have done a better job. But for so long, we just left them there doing the best that they could. So I want to compliment them, but still we got to get to the problem so that when the help comes again, we need it in all form.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Congressman.
Thanks, Congressman. Now, when Congressman Thompson was talking about the flood, the Mississippi River overflowed its banks back
was
in 1900.
Was that in Galveston?
No. This is Galveston was 1900, I think.
Okay.
This is 1927. And what happened was whites in that area put blacks on some barges and sent them up the Mississippi while whites went on a steamboat to safety. And as they did, they had a band playing Bye Bye Blackbird.
Oh, my God. Well, I think the subtext of what you just said right there still exists in the culture today. We're going to get into that a little bit in statements made by the president. And just in, you know, the realities of the situation, how race plays in. So let's have that conversation in just a couple minutes. It's 18 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition. I'm Mark, and that's Mark. Stay with us.
Morning's Edition on the air and online. Morning'sEdition.com. Air America Radio. Whether it's the governor's problem, I don't know whether it's the president's problem, but somebody needs to get their ass on the plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
That's what we're going to do. It's 23 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America's Morning Sedition. That, of course, was Mayor Ray Nagin of New Orleans last week telling us what we need to do, and we are going to continue talking about it. I just want to plug something real quick. Next, our live broadcast will be this weekend, this Friday, at the New School. If you want to come down, it's going to be our biggest we've ever had. We're going to have Senator Bob Kerrey. We're going to have The Daily Show, Stephen Colbert. We're going to be in the same theater that used to be where the Actors Studio was shot. That's the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. That's Friday from 6 to 9. Riley and I just talked to Congressman Benny Thompson of Mississippi. Riley educated me to this the flood of 1927. Now, tell me about that again. The banks of the Mississippi overflowed in Mississippi.
Yep.
And they put all the black people on a barge.
On a barge, sent them the wrong way.
Okay.
Okay, toward the floodwaters. And as whites got on a steamboat and headed away from danger,
yeah.
They had a band on the steamboat that apparently played Bye Bye Black.
All right, so there was this shameless racism that was accepted in this country at that time in history, and I believe it still exists in this country today, and when something happens like this in New Orleans and you see who the victims are and how they're treated, it's hard to deny it. Now, on the NBC telethon over the weekend, Mike Myers was hosting. He's going to be the first voice you'll hear, and Kanye West had something to say on the issue himself.
There's now over 25 feet of water where there was once city streets and thriving neighborhoods.
Oh. I hate the way they portray us in the media. If you see a black family, it says they're looting. See a white family, it says they're looking for food. And you know it's been 5 days because most of the people are black. And even for me to complain about, I would be a hypocrite because I've tried to turn away from the TV because it's too hard to watch. I've even been shopping before even giving a donation. So now I'm calling my business manager right now to see what is the biggest amount I can give. And just to imagine if I was down there, and those are my people down there. So anybody out there that wants to do anything that we can help with the setup, the way America is set up to help the poor, the black people, the less well off as slow as possible. I mean, this is Red Cross is doing everything they can. We already realize a lot of the people that could help are at war right now, fighting another way, and they've given them permission to go down and shoot us.
And subtle, but in even many ways more profoundly devastating, is the lasting damage to the survivors' will to rebuild and remain in the area. The destruction of the spirit of the people of southern Louisiana and Mississippi may end up being the most tragic loss of all.
George Bush doesn't care about black people. Please call.
See, what happened there was that NBC cut off the transmission. And as somebody who's been on television myself, what you're hearing there is Mike Myers was reading from a cue card in both cases, and he chose not to to detach from the cue card. Kanye West, the rapper, from the get-go, I heard it in his voice, I heard it in his throat, had made a decision to take a stand on national television. And to feel that kind of pressure under those lights, knowing that you are about to enter the time zone of reality when everybody else around you is in the time zone of television, is a profound moment. You could hear that in his voice, that he could not help but to speak his heart at that moment to the American people, and probably the largest audience of American people that are going to hear anything like that said. It was cut off. It was preempted or censored in the feed to the West Coast.
Yes.
But you could hear it in his voice. This is an articulate guy who writes language, but you know that was his heart talking, and we're going to get more into the race issue and the class issue with some sound from Barbara Bush and the president in just a second, and we're going to talk about it. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. Good morning.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. In honor of CNN's 25th anniversary, Morning Sedition is proud to present Great Moments in Journalism on CNN.
You simply get chills every time you see these poor individuals, as Jack Cafferty just pointed out, so tragically, so many of these people, almost all of them that we see, are so poor and they are so black, and this is going to raise lots of questions.
This has been Great Moments in Journalism on CNN, brought to you by Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
They're so black.
So black.
34 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's great to be back. Great to see you, Riley.
Great to see you, man. And let's say good morning to Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah, Wolf Blitzer. You know, it was one of those weird moments where I don't think he knew what was exactly coming out of his
mouth. He's so rich and he's so white.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some. Yeah.
Sorry.
But this is a very revealing thing because it happened and we're going to hear from George Bush in a second. You just scratch under the surface, not only of their unconsciouses. You know, what you're hearing is something percolating out of the unconscious of Wolf Blitzer. And in a minute, we'll hear from George W. Bush. But what you're seeing is you're scratching the surface of the cultural fabric of this country. And what you're seeing underneath that fabric in relation to the tragedy in New Orleans is that there are racist policies at work all the time in this country, and this is like exactly, this is what Republican policy looks like when it culminates in a disaster, is the abandonment of, you know, of, what is it? It's probably about 90% of poor African-American people in this country.
Yeah, and see, what people don't understand about what Kanye West said the other day and about what these images shown to black Americans actually mean is that poor black people in cities like Memphis and Minneapolis and L.A. and Portland, Oregon, and all over the country looked at what they saw happening to blacks in New Orleans and said, you know what? There, but for the grace of God, go I.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because there are literally millions of poor black people trapped in cities across America who are in exactly the same circumstance as the black people of New Orleans.
With no flood water. In the same
economic situation. Yes. No car, no job, no hope.
And that's why a lot of these people could not get out. They didn't have cars. Certainly couldn't afford the gas that was going in, that's now almost $4 a gallon in some places.
Now look, when I left town, the last Monday gas was at $2.47. When I got back, it was at $3.39.
It's like, I just just, you know, we got to, I can't make it clear enough that what is happening in New Orleans, not to, you know, including, this is not the results. This is not because of Hurricane Katrina. What happened in New Orleans is because it's a result of 4 years of deliberate Republican policy and budget choices that favor ideology and partisan loyalty at the expense of operational competence. This is not a group that knows how to govern. All they know is how to play politics, and now the result of their politics is exactly what it looks like on the ground there in New Orleans. This is, you know, they are racist policies, number one. They are economically favoring the rich only, economically favoring corporations only. What's going to happen when these people have to declare bankruptcy? They can't anymore because of legislation passed by this administration, which makes it nearly impossible for individuals to declare personal bankruptcy, even when it's a tragedy.
Now, what happens, by the way, when they put, Congress has talked about allocating $10.5 billion to try and clean all of this up. What happens if it goes through, and this is the point that Congressman Thompson made, if it goes through the same terminally corrupt and incompetent agency that mishandled everything in the first place?
Well, then it'll go right into the pockets of some Bush crony. And I don't want to sound heavy-handed here, but I'll tell you, I was watching, you know, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. You know, I was watching C-SPAN, I was watching the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, and Jesse Jackson Jr. was very articulate, and, you know, and he basically said, look, you know, you're going to have to get these people into a situation where they can get some normalcy in their lives. You know, they've got to, you can't start shuffling people around. These people have to be treated with respect. They have to be set up places, and they have to be told that, look, it's going to be a few months, could be a year, but, you know, here's where you eat, here's where some food, you know, this is what's going on.
Well,
here's,
you know,
some
what
money.
You know what's interesting? The city of Detroit, out of all the cities in America, and by the way, Kwame Kirkpatrick, who's the mayor of Detroit, his mother is part of the CBC. Mm-hmm. She's a congresswoman. Mm-hmm. Now, what they did, they flew Northwest Airlines, they made a deal with them, flew down to New Orleans, took 500 people out of the Superdome, flew them to Detroit, housed, they're housing them, they're feeding them through joint public-private partnerships, and they're putting their kids in school through December of this year.
Yeah.
Now, that is a response. This was an immediate response to what happened.
And that's what has to happen, because you can't, you know, you can't let these people just fall through the cracks. They were already falling through the cracks. That's why they, you know, were, a lot of them were stuck where they were, because they had already fallen through the cracks of society. It's a shame. And the bottom line is that these people that run this country, these people in this, and the Bush family in particular, are a bunch of aristocratic asses who have no respect for you know, for most people beneath their class. This is an issue of class, this is an issue of race. Now, I, for some reason, got very hung up on something that George W. Bush said in Mississippi last week in reference to the damage on the Gulf Coast. Can we hear that, Chris?
This guy lost his entire house. There's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
He was talking about Trent Lott, and he basically said that Trent Lott lost his entire house, and it's, when it's going to be rebuilt, it's going to be just great, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch of that house. Now, out of his stupid unconscious percolates the only sort of, like, self-declared heinous racist in the Senate. The guy who lost his gig in the Senate for being a heinous racist. This is the guy that George Bush, that percolates out of his unconscious as the guy whose porch he wants to sit on when everything is said and done. Now, if that doesn't reveal, maybe I'm deconstructing too much, maybe I'm too psychoanalytical, but if that doesn't reveal an inherent racism, you know, at the very least, an inherent classism on behalf of this president and a complete lack of empathy, I don't know what does. I like poetry. That's why I take a line like that and I go to town, Riley.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you start thinking about the long-term ramifications of what's happened in New Orleans, you have to ask yourself, what happens when you displace 250,000 overwhelmingly poor, mostly black people out of an area? Okay. And by the way, most of those poor black people, the ones that do vote Democratic. Right?
Yeah.
Let's be real about this. Let's be as political as George Bush is.
Well, I'll tell you, I hope that all black people vote Democratic. The small majority of people, of black people that didn't vote Democratic, for whatever reason, you got to be out of your mind at this point.
But think about what it means to the Republican power structure in Louisiana to see 250,000 poor black Democrats leave the state. Most of them not to return. I saw several different interviews that CNN and a couple of other networks did with people who were relocated. All right. There was one woman, a black woman. She was a nurse. She said, look, I'm fortunate. All I have to do is get a license and then I could practice right here. And, you know, I can get a nursing job in Houston. And you know what? I'm not going back.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing about what you're saying is that about 240,000 of these people that were displaced are in Houston.
In Houston,
and
Texas.
And many of them have got nothing. They it's not so much that they, you know, I'm glad that she has a nursing degree and can and reintegrate herself into society in an easy way, but many people don't. And somehow or another, Barbara Bush, the matriarch of this nightmare that is running our country, you know, had this to say about the people at the Houston Astrodome as she walked through.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
What crazy? Did you hear her chuckling? Can we hear that again, please? Is it possible?
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
Oh, it's working out great.
Oh,
for
yeah,
them.
It's great.
Look,
hey.
Look, they can lay in the bleachers. Look, they can either lay on the ground here in the Astrodome on a cot, or maybe go sit in the bleachers and look at their lives, you know, in their minds disappearing.
Oh,
what, is she crazy? What a classist. Oh, my.
How do you respond to something
I don't know,
as
just
idiotic as that?
I just turned all that anger inward, though. Did you hear? Did you hear? Like I had this momentum.
Come on, we're gonna bring it back out, though.
Right,
we gotta bring it back out.
To me, it just sounds like an aristocrat, somebody walking through, you know, the worst of all situations, saying, "Well, I'm okay, and these people, they should be happy that I'm here."
Yeah, well, this is the whole Marie Antoinette thing, and Barbara Bush has the hair for it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think she put the hair on her son too. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
Now, her husband and former President Bill Clinton are leading efforts to get the corporate, you know, the corporate folks off the dime on this.
A former President Clinton, a guy who knew how to handle a hurricane,
yeah.
In September of 1999, he called Hurricane Floyd one of the most serious hurricanes ever to threaten the United States, and he immediately issued disaster declarations for Florida and Georgia in anticipation, that's a key word here, anticipation,
yep,
of the destruction the storm may wreak on the southeastern U.S. coast. The president planned to return home immediately from New Zealand, where he was doing some business, to oversee emergency efforts for the storm. He wasn't going to play golf or go play guitar with a country music guy or maybe, you know, hang out in Crawford for another 2 days. This was a president who knew what it was like to be underprivileged, who knew what it was like to feel the pain of not having enough food, of not having enough social support. And this was a guy that, because of that capacity for empathy, was immediately able to reach out to the people that needed it and immediately able to facilitate the federal government to take the actions necessary, unlike this aristic bunch of neocon yahoos that are running this thing. You know, it's heinous.
You know, there is a question.
It's my word of the day, by the way.
Yeah, heinous
is the word of the day.
You know, there's a question that has been brought up by more than one person, including, I believe, Governor Blanco of Louisiana, as to why the National Guard was not federalized by this president. Remember that his father, during the height of the 1992 riots in Los Angeles, federalized the National Guard. In other words, took the National Guard out of the hands of the state governors where it normally, you know, where their authority normally rests, and put it in the hands of the federal government. This is something that this president has refused to do in New Orleans, and his not doing so has created blurred lines of distinction as to who they're supposed to be reporting to.
I'll tell you one thing he'll do, though, is he'll go down there and he'll stop the, you know, look, you know, I'm reading this Clinton stuff about, you know, how he quickly he was responding, but this is apparently some protocol. The president has made a practice of visiting the sites of major disasters, relief operations, and comfort victims, but such visits are often delayed until logistics of the president's visit won't interfere with relief efforts. That was Clinton. This was a guy that knew that, like, you know, I'll go make an appearance because I want to help out, but, you know, I'm not going to do it when it stifles relief efforts. Well, you know, in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about how George Bush completely panicked and desperate to try and,
salvage something.
Yeah, to salvage, you know, his image on some level, went right in there into Mississippi, into New Orleans, and stopped relief efforts so he could take a picture. And even manufactured relief outposts that were dissembled, you know, within hours after, just to take a picture. Grabbed anybody who was around, even if they didn't live in the area, and put his arms around them just to take a picture. All right? How many people died because he needed his picture taken because he closed airspace over the Gulf region for hours while he took pictures? We'll talk about that in a minute. But in a second, you know, we're going to check in with Lawton Smalls. Let's see where he's at. Yeah, I think I might be too angry to talk to Lawton Smalls. 47 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition podcast, Morning Sedition, folks. You can go to morningsedition.com and you can download some stuff. If you go there, they'll hook you up. A lot of people are doing that. I talk to some people on the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Hawaii. I met some fans of Morning Sedition Hawaii.
In Hawaii?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that. Some cats, I met a guy in L.A. I did a lot of comedy out in L.A., a guy who listens to us at 4 in the morning. And, you know, it's just it's amazing how people are finding us. Yeah, given the fact that we're on 60 stations, it's still very difficult to know where and why we're
which
on.
60?
You know, not why we're on, but how to get us. But some people are finding ways. Look, folks, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's rescue ship is bound for glory. Wipe your feet and come on in.
All right. Well, you know, Hurricane Katrina certainly dealt a terrible blow to the South, and I know how hard this all must be for you. Are you okay, Lawton?
Well, thank you, Mark. Mm-hmm. That is very Christian of you, and it is a refreshing change from your usual snotty, negative, pro-death, secular humanism.
Oh, man. What do I do this
for? Well, it has been a trying time, no question about it. But no matter what happens, Mark, hell or high water, our faith will see us through this.
Well, you know, somehow I knew you'd be okay, Lon.
America is so lucky. The Lord has blessed us with such a strong, capable, compassionate leader.
Oh, no.
At a
no,
time
yeah, no,
like
no.
this.
You know, I was afraid of this. I'm too angry. What?
Exactly why President George W. two-terms mandate Bush got that second term.
What are you
right now, because he's the greatest president in a crisis ever.
You're out of your
forget
mind.
Forget Roosevelt, forget Lincoln, forget Churchill. After this week, even you have to admit that. You
what
have
are you,
to.
What are you, crazy? I don't have to admit any of that. You know, I'm really too aggravated to even deal with this crap from you right now. What has he done? What?
Are you kidding me? Let's start with him flying over that disaster scene. He got down within 1,700 feet of the disaster. Do you know how close that is? And he looked down from his airplane window, and he said, I will never forget this. He said, it's devastating.
It's devastating. Wow, that's terrific. He's really good, this guy.
It gives you chills, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. For all the wrong reasons.
Toby Keith, all the great poets. And that's before he rolled up his sleeves and got to work.
Yeah, I'd love to know what exactly what he's actually doing down there. Could you please tell me, Lawton?
100 things at once.
Oh, come on.
He's pumping water out of the streets.
No,
he's rebuilding the levees. He's fixing the roof on the Superdome.
Oh, come on.
He's saving puppies.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
riding around in a
he
boat arresting looters and evildoers. He's wrestling alligators.
Stop it. We need to stop it.
Him doing that. We're lucky the man has stayed in such top physical condition.
Oh, come
you know,
on.
All that mountain biking really paying dividends now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We need a strong man.
Yeah. I'm glad he was getting his exercise so he could wrestle alligators and rebuild the levees. Right.
You know, something about those levees. You know who sabotaged those?
Who?
Bill Clinton.
Oh, shut up.
I know,
you know
people
what?
Down there.
I've had enough of this crap.
Where they saw him and Hillary late at night with power tools drilling holes in the levee.
What are you, crazy?
Chelsea, too.
Oh, stop it.
Power tools with Chelsea.
Stop it. I'm not even going to dignify that crap from you. But I do want to ask you about something.
Yes.
Katrina is the worst natural disaster in a century.
Yep.
And Bush takes 2 days off his vacation. 2 days. That's it. Two days.
I know. The man's personal sacrifice never fails to astonish me.
Unbelievable.
He could have stayed at Crawford, but he interrupted his rigorous exercise regime just to attend to this.
Lawton.
Yeah?
That's his job.
Oh,
people were
okay.
counting on him, and he just didn't care enough to show up sooner, my friend.
Mark, you were just on vacation, weren't you? Hawaii, wasn't it? Uh-huh. Hey, that sounds nice.
Yeah, what's your point?
I noticed when Katrina hit, you didn't cut your vacation short, surfer boy. You didn't exactly rush back to help now, did you?
I'm not the president.
Oh.
I'm not the president.
Okay,
I don't have an entire nation expecting me to be a leader while people are suffering and dying. And just like he's done his entire life, he let someone else do the work after he screwed everything up. We needed a leader, and he dropped the ball, Lawton, again. This is a disgrace. The Republicans are going to pay for this big time, my friend, and you know that.
Mark?
What?
The neocons are screwed, aren't we?
Oh, man, they are so screwed.
But hurricane! Stupid hurricane! Who are we going to blame this on, huh? God?
Yeah.
We can't blame God, but we got to blame somebody, and it's going to end up raining down on us like a poop storm.
Yes, sir.
Again.
Oh, I hope
I hope so.
Take it easy, buddy. Just take it easy. All right. Yes, you are done, but you got to take it easy. You got to take it easy. All right. This isn't going to help, man. Just take it easy, please. All right. Take a breath. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
You see, Bill and Hillary were setting off sticks of dynamite under the levees. Everyone's seen it. I have video of it.
Goodbye, Lon.
Lon,
hanging up now. Goodbye.
All right, now. God loves you. Deal with it.
Awful.
Oh, my goodness.
Just awful. You know, I didn't even have the patience for him today. So you know what else stopped during the stopped recovery operations? You know why? Because Bush needed to take a picture.
Whoa.
And you know that picture you saw on TV, that film image? It was all a set. But the bottom line is, was that picture worth the lives that were cost because Bush needed to rebuild his image? We'll get into that in a second. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're back. We're ready to go. We're armed for bear this morning. Good morning, Duluth, Minnesota. We're on 1490 AM in Duluth. It's Air America 1490. Folks, if you live in the New York area or you want to fly in, I'll tell you, Riley, some people fly in for our live broadcast.
That's right.
They have. I'm not lying. People have flown in. They've come up to me and said, we flew in for this. I can't remember from where. I think one guy from Ohio. I believe it was Ohio.
Yeah.
And Montana, we had a guy come in. That's, that's very nice. You know, people send some nice stuff. I got back today. You know, I haven't been in the office in 2 weeks. I got a stack of boxes. I opened up a care package. It looked like there was 900 bags of popcorn in there. I'll talk about it tomorrow, maybe, but I don't know where it came from. I had a pair of shoes. People were sending me all kinds of stuff.
Uh-oh.
This Friday, as I was saying, if you're in town, come on down because it's going to be a big, big live show. Friday morning, we're going to be at the New School. We'll have former Senator Bob Kerrey and The Daily Show Stephen Colbert. We're going to be in the same theater that you would have seen the Actors Studio broadcast from. It's also the same theater where they had a 9/11 commission hearing. It's the New York New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. That's Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. I also want to encourage people to email us if you want to ask us something. Sometimes we read them all. That's sedition@airamericaradio.com. And podcasting has become very popular. As I said,
yeah.
Riley, I was in Hawaii having a nice time. You know who walks up to me and goes, you're Mark Maron, right? I love your show, NYPD. A cop.
Really? A cop
on his honeymoon. Nice guy.
Yeah.
I sat and talked to him while loves our show. Says he's trying to get his buddies on the force to listen.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But he's a big fan. I ran into a cat in L.A. Yeah, it was great to be in L.A. for a week. I got to be honest with you. I was a little detached from the events that unfolded in the country, but I was able to get into my own head again a little bit and do some stand-up and write some new material. Some guy out there, because we're in L.A., it's a travesty, but we're on it like from 3 to 6 in the morning. morning.
3 to 6 in the morning.
Because
yeah.
this horrendous, horrendous show has taken our place. But this guy comes up to me and he says, look, you know, I listen to you every day. I got to go to work at 4. So he's up. He's on the baker's hours. He's digging it.
Oh, okay.
And then the people, I guess what I'm leading up to is that you can't podcast our show. You can podcast the show if you go to morningsedition.com and look under the podcasting thing. That's how my wife listens because, you know, she can't get up to listen. My dad apparently has decided he's going to listen. He apparently sleeps a lot, my old man, in the morning. So
okay.
He said he's going to get up to listen because I got, you know, what I got from him yesterday is like, it's interesting how people seek to blame. You know, my father calls me up. He's like, yeah, so whose fault is it that that the rescue effort didn't happen so quickly? Is it the state government? I said, look, you got to stop listening to whatever you're listening to. Turn off the Fox News because you got common sense. I said this to my father. It's like, whose fault is it? Whose fault do you think it is? It's the federal government's fault for not doing their damn job. You know? And it's just interesting, though, how people, like, they displace themselves. They detach themselves from the horror that's going on down there and try to make arguments about stuff. And the bottom line is that the Bush administration dropped the ball. It's negligence. It's murderous negligence on a big scale to the point where, you know, we're going to get into this in a minute, but he staged these press opportunities. And when he flew in, this is something Bill Clinton would never have done. He flew in and he had them clear the airspace for Marine One in order to stage these photo ops to try and shore up his image in the fact that he dropped the ball on this thing. And they stopped rescue operations so he could make some appearances on the ground and set up photo opportunities. How many people died because of that? Heinous. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But right now, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Luckily, we have this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. You can see Brendan do that live this Friday at the News School.
Yeah.
From the Associated Press, White House ramps up Katrina response. White House ramps up Katrina response. See the translation here. White House ramps up talking about Katrina response. From the Indianapolis Star, Bush picks Roberts to be Chief Justice. Bush picks Roberts to be Chief Justice. Let's see, translation here. Critics say this means Roberts far worse than they suspected. From Reuters, gay cowboy flick, talk of town at Venice Film Festival. Gay cowboy flick, talk of town at Venice Film Festival. Translation, critics praise film, say gay subtext of Westerns finally becomes text. I'm looking forward to seeing that movie, actually.
I actually saw a preview for it during The Constant Gardener.
Did it turn you on a little?
No, but people were giggling quite a lot.
Were they?
Yeah. And
really?
And this was
during The Constant Gardener?
No.
During the trailer.
During the trailer for Broken Back Mountain.
No, I know, but they were there to see The Constant Gardener. You wouldn't think that would be a giggly sort of...
The crowd.
Oh, look at the gay cowboys type of crowd. What did you think of that movie, Chris?
That was great.
Boy, I thought that in a movie elevated the dialogue a little bit. You know, I was, I went with my wife and another couple, her cousin out there in Los Angeles, and I walked out thinking like, wow, this was a pretty gutsy movie to make about what they made about the pharmaceutical industry, experimenting, testing out vaccines and whatnot on unsuspecting populations of, again, black people in Africa.
Gee, we're so special.
And, but I thought it was a really grown-up sort of movie, and it really had some guts to it, and it got a little complicated. And didn't you find his filmmaking a little tedious after certain points? It's like, all right, enough with the feet and the hands and the colors. Didn't you find that the pace kind of slowed up?
No, I actually thought it was quite interesting how he decided to make the movie. You know,
No. But what I'm saying is, can't you just think like me? What I'm saying,
no, please.
It was interesting, and I think he is a great filmmaker, and I thought City of God was a genius movie, which was his first movie, and I enjoy the way he makes movies, but I thought, you didn't think it slowed down a little bit? You didn't think it got slow?
No, I think it had to get slow, you know, to draw in the dramatic element.
No, but didn't you think that that it got a little too slow? Didn't you think that you could think like me for a minute and just agree with me?
Sure.
Okay. Wow, yeah. This is definitely not...
Siskel and Ebert, I can tell you
this
that.
This is a good argument. Can't you just admit that you're wrong and that you don't know anything about movies and that clearly you were just sort of amazed that you were at a movie that dealt with adult themes that weren't, you know, sex and poo-poo? Come on.
I was just happy to be there.
All right, now that we've solved that, let's get to the core of what is important in this country today, which is that President Bush goes down to Mississippi, right? Am I getting this right? He goes to Mississippi, and when he lands, he's at a hangar there. There are helicopters in the background. Now, a lot of people would have been asking, hey, buddy, why aren't the helicopters airlifting victims off of roofs? Why aren't the helicopters evacuating people out of this sewage-filled water and their homes? Because I'll tell you why. Air traffic was shut down so the president could have his moment as trying to present himself as a concerned citizen. They shut the airspace down. That means that people could have drowned while he was, making his little statement, while he was presenting himself as the caring president. They could have drowned. How many people could have been saved in the 8 or 9 hours that he was there? I'll tell you one thing I know for sure, and that is that 3 tons of food ready for delivery by air to refugees in St. Bernard Parish and on Algiers Point sat on the Crescent City Connection Bridge. This is food. Just sat there Friday afternoon as air traffic was halted because the president was there. The provisions, they were secured by a couple of reps down there, just sat there in the sun, baking, as Bush surveyed damage across southeast Louisiana. And this is, of course, 5 days after the storm. And the food just sat there. And they had arrangements to airlift it out, but it had to wait the entire day till they took it out that night.
Well, see, and the thing is, Mark, you don't have to do it that way.
Of course
not. How do we know you don't have to do it that way? Because Bill Clinton, George W. Bush's predecessor, didn't do it that way. He waited until the relief efforts were done before he went into he had to deal with any kind of airspace issues with his visiting a particular area.
And time is of the essence in this situation. In just a minute, we're going to hear from a guy named Aaron Broussard. He's the Jefferson Parish president. He's also the president of PACE, which is an organization that fights for money to try to hold back the erosion of the city's walls.
Yeah.
But he was on TV. He was on Meet the Press, and it was a very powerful moment where he breaks down in talking about the loss of one of his co-workers' mothers. But, you know, time is of the essence, and we've got a president that is so insensitive that when he finally does go down there, he's got the audacity to clear the airspace so he can look like he's doing something. It's just another symbol of the complete lack of responsibility or empathy or concern for the citizens of this country by this president, certainly certain citizens. We'll hear that in just a second. We'll also talk about Laura Bush and her lack of concern as well and her need to make a showing for the press. 16 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on the air. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to John Eisenberg, who is the lawyer of Michael Schiavo. He's got a book coming out about the religious rights conspiracy to take away our rights. Using Terry is the name of the book, and we're going to talk to him about maybe a little bit about the Supreme Court and also about the religious right, obviously. I'm looking forward to that conversation. As I was saying before the break, we wanted to play this piece of sound from Meet the Press. This is Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard. He is also the president of Parishes Against Coastal Erosion. This is a guy that's been fighting for years to get the federal government to kick in some dough to, requiring, any new offshore oil and gas revenue to be put into a trust fund dedicated to coastal erosion, and i.e., shoring up these levees so they are able to sustain a Category 5 hurricane. This is a guy that's fought for this and in his heart knew that it was going to take something like this to maybe get some change done. But, you know, judging by this administration's response to this tragedy, who the hell knows if that's even true. But this was one of the most powerful moments for me in watching coverage of what's been happening down there. Can we hear that, Chris?
Most importantly, I want to thank my public employees that have worked 24/7, that burn out, the doctors, the nurses. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me. The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, "Are you coming, son? Is somebody coming?" And she said, "Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday." And she drowned it Friday night. She drowned it Friday night.
Mr. President,
nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us. The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Yeah, that was Aaron Broussard. He's Jefferson Parish president. You know, on Meet the Press with Tim Russert. He's also the president of Parishes Against Coastal Erosion. This is a guy that knew what was going to happen. And in light of the president's poor response, a friend of his lost his mother at a nursing home. And this is the type of negligence that causes, you know, hundreds of deaths. These guys should be guilty of murder. The federal, you know, Michael Chertoff, Michael Brown, the lot of them, George W. Bush. And, you know, and this is the audacity on top of that. The audacity of this president to go in to try and shore up his image problems. This is from a press release from Senator Landrieu of Louisiana. Quote, "But perhaps the greatest disappointment stands at the breached 17th Street levee. Touring this critical site yesterday with the president, I saw what I believe to be a real and significant effort to get a handle on a major cause of this catastrophe. Flying over this critical spot again this morning, less than 24 hours later, it became apparent that yesterday we witnessed a hastily prepared stage set for a presidential photo opportunity. And the desperately needed resources we saw were this morning reduced to a single, lonely piece of equipment. The good and decent people of southeast Louisiana and the Gulf Coast, black and white, rich and poor, young and old, deserve far better from their national government," end quote. That what he did was he went in there and set up a false situation where an effort to reconstruct or rescue was being done, and that was dismantled immediately after he left. And the fact that he stopped air traffic in order to park his butt in New Orleans to make a photo opportunity while people could be saved. And after hearing Aaron Broussard, that time is of the essence for so many people that are in compromised positions, that this president would go in and do that and not wait because he's more concerned with politics than he is with people.
Well, he's also setting up a situation where people no longer believe him. Earlier, you read a piece, I believe, from the editorial from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. And he, you know, that editorial said, you know, "You've promised certain things. Pardon us if we're a little skeptical about your ability to deliver them."
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Mary Landrieu is talking about here. The fact that the man said, "Oh, yeah, we're going to fix this. We're going to do all of these things." But the fact of the matter is, when the rubber meets the road, the help wasn't there.
No better is his wife, Laura. This is from a eyewitness account that we pulled off Daily Kos. Of a guy who was working with the Red Cross in Baton Rouge. Quote, "It actually couldn't have been a worse experience. A team of us were working to put up a website with directions to every Red Cross shelter in the region when we were evicted from the computer room by the Secret Service. There's only one room in the Cajun Dome with telephones and internet access for refugees, and Laura Bush shut it down for 8 hours, along with food service rooms to the side and the woman's showers. You may have seen it on CNN. Apparently, 7 refugees were allowed back so Laura could help them in front of the cameras," end quote. Shut down the communications office necessary to keep things moving, to keep helping people that they keep calling refugees. How about displaced Americans?
Yes, the displaced, the dislocated, the evacuees, not refugees. Refugees come from someplace else. The people who were taken out of New Orleans are Americans.
And that letter you were quoting, this is an open letter to the president from the editorial staff of the Times-Picayune of New Orleans. Dear Mr. President, we heard you loud and clear Friday when you visited our devastated city in the Gulf Coast and said, quote, what is not working, we're going to make right, make it right, end quote. Please forgive us if we wait to see proof of your promise before believing you. But we have good reason for our skepticism. Moving a little further down the letter, we're angry, Mr. President, and we'll be angry long after our beloved city and surrounding parishes have been pumped dry. Our people deserved rescuing. Many who could have been were not. That's to the government's shame. When we come back, we're going to talk to Michael Schiavo's lawyer about the religious right and the use of Terry Schiavo, and also maybe a little bit about the Supreme Court nominee. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I hope you're having as good a morning as possible out there. Our next guest has actually taken on the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade firsthand, my friends, firsthand. Our next guest represented Michael Schiavo, Terry Schiavo's husband, and is the author of Using Terry, the Religious Rights Conspiracy to Take Away Our Rights. He'll also help bring us up to speed a little bit on the latest Supreme Court nomination. Attorney John Eisenberg joined us. Good morning there, John.
Good morning.
Nice of you to be here. Now, you must be, now, what was your first reaction when you heard that they were just going to go ahead and nominate John Roberts for head justice there, chief justice?
My first reaction was, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's it? Not like, we're in trouble! Oh, my God!
Well, it's more a matter of wanting to know where he stands on the issue I'm particularly interested in light of what I've been through in the past year,
mm-hmm,
where he stands on the Schiavo case.
Sure.
And generally on the right to refuse medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have much of a record on that. What he does have is a record of hanging out, if I may, with some of the attorneys who represented Governor Jeb Bush and the Schindlers in the Schiavo case. In fact, he was handpicked by one of the Schindlers' attorneys, Jay Sekulo, who was one of President Bush's chief advisors on judicial appointments. And I gotta wonder how he feels about the right to refuse medical treatment, if he would stand with Sekulo.
Right. Now, the Schindlers are Terry's parents.
Yes, that is correct.
And you represented Michael. And this was an amazing case because this was really, I mean, politicized almost more than anything in my memory in terms of trying to, you know, replace the Constitution with the Bible.
Oh, some incredibly outrageous things happened in this case.
Like what, for instance?
Like, for example, Jeb Bush made two attempts in late March to abduct Terry Schiavo.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. There's a bureau. There's some kind of bureau in Florida.
The Department of Children and Families.
Families, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
He actually sent agents out to go to a hospice to grab her from her bed and take her to the hospital and have a feeding tube forcibly returned to her.
Right.
He was stopped twice by Judge Greer under threat of incarceration. I mean, there was a confrontation brewing between the Florida executive, Governor Bush, and the Florida judiciary, Judge Greer, in which Bush was about to violate a court order which could have led to Judge Greer throwing him in jail, something that I had a lot of fun writing about in my book.
I bet.
You know, there seemed to be, John Eisenberg, an awful lot of very heated rhetoric that came out of the tragedy of Terry Schiavo's situation, where there were, you know, people were inferring that, the judiciary was out of control, that some people, Justice Greer and others who had ruled in favor of her right to end her life, were guilty of, in essence, high crimes and misdemeanors. And there were people who were likening violence or potential violence to this entire situation. I get a sense that perhaps, even though obviously the Terry Schiavo case has been settled on one level, that a lot of those issues are still out there, are they?
Yes, indeed. The Schiavo case has to be understood in its context as being one of the fronts in the culture wars It was turned into a culture war battle by some extremely well-funded, extremely radical elements of the religious right and the right in general. And as a result, some pretty amazing and appalling things happened in that case. They lost. They miscalculated. They did not understand what 80% of the American people felt about the case, which is that Congress should butt out and Terry Schiavo should be allowed to die. That's what eventually happened, and it happened because the courts stepped in and restored reason to that entire spectacle.
Now, you know, we talked a lot about this when it was going on because, you know, I personally have a tremendous problem with what I call the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade. The way they were characterizing, you know, Michael Schiavo as this, you know, this heinous, you know, a person who might have even been responsible for the condition she was in initially. Can you give us some idea of what he's like as a guy? Because it was my interpretation that this was a guy that went out of his way to do everything he could to help his wife.
Well, let me just first say that you've heard the old adage that in war, the first casualty is truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true for the culture wars, too.
Sure.
Michael Schiavo is no monster.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a regular guy who tried to do what he believed and what his family believed and what his wife's friends believed she would have wanted under the circumstances. It's a very private decision, pulling the plug on somebody. I know I've been through it. The first chapter in my book, I discuss my own experience in having to pull the plug on one of my own relatives and what sensitized me to what all is involved in doing this sort of thing. That his own private anguish, and the private anguish, I might add, of the Schindlers, Terry's parents, was turned into a public spectacle and exploited for political gain. That I found really outrageous. It shouldn't have happened.
So now, if these forces in our country were, and also you said that there was plans that Jeb Bush wanted to abduct Terry Schiavo. There's also talk of some militias getting together and abducting her. That some of the like the Michigan militia guys.
Oh yeah, we had Bo Grites come out from Nevada.
Now, what exactly in your eyes do they want? What is a world if they were to win? What does that world look like if the religious right was to get what they wanted? You know, what does that world look like?
Okay, when I refer to religious right, I am talking about a political force, not necessarily a religious force.
Right.
What the religious right wants is control over our lives, not just over our lives, but how we die as well as how we live. What they wanted in this case was to give the state the right to keep Terry Schiavo alive against her wishes, no matter what her condition. That's what they want. This is a battle over personal autonomy, the constitutional right to control your own body.
John Eisenberg, when we look now at the possibility of John Roberts becoming the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and certainly the president still having another justice to appoint, do you think that these people's positions on right to die will become part of the record in terms of questions from the... It seems like the senators are focusing on abortion. Do you think right to die is going to come up?
I think it ought to, and I think it probably will. Not everybody in this country is going to have to worry about making choices about abortion. We don't all get pregnant. Everybody is going to die eventually.
Oh, damn it. Really?
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry to bring that news to the American public, but that's a bit of a downer, I know, but... you remember the movie Moonstruck when the Olympia Dukakis character said to her husband, "You're gonna die"?
Yeah.
Well, it's true. We're all going to die. I'm sorry to tell everybody that. But modern medicine has gotten to the point where it can keep people alive long beyond the point where they would have died naturally.
Right.
And many of us are going to be facing decisions, as I have myself personally, about our family members as well as about ourselves. This is an issue that touches every American, and I think it's an issue that must be probed in these confirmation hearings in light of what happened just a few months ago in the Schiavo case.
Now, what was your personal experience with this?
My personal experience 7 years ago, a very close relative of mine, she happened to be a second cousin once removed, but she was one of my closest relatives.
Mm-hmm.
She was in her late 70s. She had a devastating stroke. My wife and I had been taking care of her for years.
Mm-hmm.
She had a devastating stroke. She ended up in a hospital, not quite in a persistent vegetative state, what the doctors call a minimally conscious state. And she had discussed with my wife and I over a period of several years previously how she felt about what she called, and what most people call, machines and tubes. Mm-hmm. She said, I don't want to be kept alive by machines and tubes. When my time comes, just let me go. She had given me the power of attorney over her medical decisions, so I had to make the decision, once she was in the hospital with her stroke in a terrible condition, whether or not to keep her feeding tube in, which she had pulled out.
Mm-hmm. And she wanted to not have it. So
she did, I knew in my heart,
sure,
that she did not want it.
Now, in your experience in defending Michael Schiavo, what were some of the most in the book, or just in your personal experience, provocative and scary moments you had with some of the characters that you were dealing with?
Oh, I think of one in particular, and let me add, there were a number of lawyers representing Michael Schiavo, mm-hmm, toward the end. This is big litigation, which required a team of people.
Sure.
Okay, it wasn't just me. It was a whole team of people working on this case, all of them doing it pro bono, by the way, without pay. I think one of the things that frightened me the most was when a congressional subcommittee subpoenaed Terry Schiavo and ordered her to bring her feeding tube to a congressional hearing on the right to die.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They
They actually issued a subpoena.
That was Tom DeLay?
That was a man named Davis.
Mm-hmm.
A senator named Davis. Okay. It was one of the subcommittees was going to hold a hearing. They had no interest in holding a hearing. What this was a device to attempt to keep her feeding tube in place.
In place, yeah.
They said, you got to come. You're going to testify. And by the way, bring your tube with you.
That is incredible.
It was grotesque.
You know, one of the things that troubled me from the very beginning in terms of the media's treatment of Michael Schiavo, and obviously the religious rights treatment as well, was the whole notion of his being an adulterer. I mean, that seemed to be where they started with all this, where they began to try and impugn his character and impugn his integrity. Talk a little bit about how you dealt with that as part of his legal team.
Well, it was actually very interesting, that whole adulterer thing, the idea that he was estranged from his wife, which was thrown about quite a bit,
yes,
by some of the advocates on the other side. About a year and a half after Terry Schiavo had her cardiac arrest, which led to her condition, during that year and a half period, Michael had worked very closely with Terry's parents, Bob and Mary Schindler, to try to get her the best treatment possible, see if somehow she could be rehabilitated. Eventually, they all realized it wasn't going to happen. She emerged from her coma, but she remained in a persistent vegetative state. The Schindlers urged Michael to go out and date other women. And
wait. The Schindlers?
The Schindlers.
Terry's parents.
Terry's parents said, Michael, it's time to get on with your life. Why don't you start dating other women? And he actually brought women home to meet the Schindlers.
So we're assuming that the Schindlers, you know, this was out of the goodness of their heart because they loved their son-in-law, not because they were setting him up.
Of course not. I mean, my heart really does go after the Schindlers. Look what happened to them. They lost their daughter. That's the worst thing that can happen to any parent.
Well, I'll tell you, John Eisenberg, the author of Using Terry, the Religious Rights Conspiracy to Take Away Our Rights. You know, it's a good topic. I wish you the best of luck with the book. And another thing is, what amazes me is that, you know, George Bush snapped right into action. You know, when it was to politicize, you know, Terry Schiavo's condition.
Yes.
It's taken him a week to pull it together to show up for these people.
Yes, he did. Well, I think in the Schiavo case, he made a very big mistake snapping into action the way he did, because he didn't really understand what the American people want about end-of-life decision-making.
He doesn't understand what they want about a lot
about
of things.
A lot
well,
of
I think he doesn't understand their need for help when disaster strikes, which is all part of this philosophy of government.
Yes, the government that has nothing to do with governing. John Eisenberg, thank you for being with us, and it was great talking to you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
We will be continuing our conversation here, Mark and I, and we're going to talk a little bit more about New Orleans. We're also going to have the liberal agenda in a couple minutes, so stay with us. It's 47 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
disaster. It can happen anywhere, but we got a few tips so you can be prepared for floods, tornadoes, or even a quake. You gotta be ready so your heart don't break. Disaster prep is your responsibility, and mitigation is important to our agency. People helping people is what we do, and FEMA is there to help see you through. When disaster strikes, we are at our best, but we're ready all the time because disasters don't rest.
Sure, yeah, that's on the FEMA for Kids website there. That's on the FEMA website. So maybe Michael Brown, the head of FEMA, should have listened to that early on and followed, you know, what the rap said, man.
Well, maybe he should do his resignation in rap. Maybe my name is Brown. Yeah. Time for me to get out of town. You know, something, because, I mean, and this has to be the only rap song I've ever heard for kids or adults that has the word mitigation in it. What the hell is that?
I don't even know what it is. What is it?
I don't know. Mitigation? Litigation?
That's hilarious.
Hey.
Chris, you know, when we were talking to John Eisenberg about Terry Schiavo, I just wanted to ask you, you know, how do you make a good omelet? Because I noticed that, like, occasionally I'll look over at Chris's computer while we have a guest, and Chris is on some website, and it's like omelet instructions. Did you get any tips there? How do you make a good omelet?
It was a crepe.
Okay,
great, right, not an omelet.
Oh, sorry. All right,
there's some fine distinctions we're talking about.
My
here.
Mistake. So
you're supposed to be looking at the guest, not me.
I was looking at the guest, but I'm looking right in
out
the
of the
screen.
Corner of his eye. He triangulates. That's
right.
All.
Yeah, Riley was talking. I'm like, I was wondering, you know, like, what is it over there? Is it what's going to be on Chris's screen? Yeah, there you go. There's a crepe. So you roll it right up like that. You want to tell us how that's done? Or
this website was telling me about a rolled crepe. I was actually looking for a regular crepe.
Uh-huh.
You know, where, you know, you put the stuff on it and it melts in and, you know.
I wish John Eisenberg was here. Maybe he knows a little something about, you know, feel free, you know, when you're doing your own research over there to just pipe in with the guests, because you never know. Some of these guys will surprise you. I bet you Eisenberg's made a crepe or two in his life.
Yeah.
But, and don't be ashamed to share, too, like in the middle of an interview.
John, wait a minute. Never mind about Terry.
Yeah.
Let's talk about crepes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the living and how they eat.
Yeah.
You know, and
you make a lot of crepes in Oakland, do you?
Yeah.
Hey, this is the best thing I've looked at during your show. I mean, I've looked at much worse things.
Oh, yeah, we know.
You don't got to tell me. You know, I just didn't want to bring them up out of respect for you. You know what I mean?
But, oh, no, you can't. We can't. I guess we can do this at the end of the show.
Yeah,
can't
of course.
We?
You know, I need to. It was very hard to readjust. You know, I mean, boy, you know, we had to jump right in, Riley. I was off for 2 weeks. You were off for
off for a week.
Last night on the phone, I'm having a meltdown because I had to, you know, compress and you know, start looking at the news as not just a regular guy who's sitting at home watching CNN, but I had to get back into the job, and I almost had a meltdown. I did have a little bit of a meltdown.
But you know what? It is when you're on vacation and you start seeing these kind of devastating pictures. For me, as a black person, it was just so painful. You know, I think it was the same thing that Kanye West was expressing when he said, you know, I don't even want to watch my television set.
Yeah.
When you see these black people who are in such obvious pain. Now, I'm not trying to triangulate and say I wouldn't feel empathy for white people who are in pain. Don't get the wrong idea here.
No, I'm not.
But just to see black folks in that kind of pain and then to see them all lumped together as looters and rapists and gunmen and things like that. And most of these people are victims.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like the world was ending. And also, I also felt like, you know, how am I going to tell my helicopter story about Hawaii?
you know,
there are people like flying helicopters saving people. I couldn't even handle flying one around just to look at a mountain.
Whoa!
That's time for the sound for the liberal agenda.
He was worried about his ruined bit.
Yeah, right.
Make me a crepe, Caleb. Here we go. Here's your liberal agenda. Write these down. One, for the lactose intolerant, work on developing a non-dairy alternative to the milk of human kindness. Two, start referring to the incompetence at the Federal Emergency Management Agency as those Republicans. Three, cling to absurd hope that we might still have a Chief Justice suitor.
Oh, yeah.
Four, send a letter to Dennis Hastert asking why they bothered to rebuild Chicago after the Great Fire of 1871. The place was clearly a lost cause. Five, root for the New Orleans Saints despite the Catholic Church's historic marginalization of women. And today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela is offering cheap gas to hurricane victims. And the price of gasoline in Venezuela is 12 cents a gallon. Assassinate him. I say make this guy our president. How do you like that? So tomorrow we've got a show right there, Riley.
That's right. We've got James Surowiecki from The New Yorker. He's going to tell us why crowds are smarter than individuals. Nick Johnson is going to tell us about Antarctica. We got a slander minute coming up.
You know what? I'm going to bring in for Chris. I bought the video, the DVD of Downfall, the movie about Hitler in the bunker. I can't stop watching. It's become an obsession.
Uh-oh.
Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, dude.
You sure you want to show it to him?
Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow. It's great seeing you again, Riley. Nice
yeah, great seeing
back.
You, man. And great seeing Kayla, the whole crew. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.